Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Welcome back to another edition of Leave the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host and taking the seat of Mr. Gabriel Montoya is Lenny Sanadova, who's also a writer for Leaving the Ring. What's up, Lenny?
Hey, replacing one nerdy Mexican guy with another nerdy Mexican guy on the boxing show.
Right. Hey, man, well, thanks first off for doing this for me. I know it was like a last-minute thing, and Gabriel's on the train headed to Mountain View, so he was going to do it, but there was going to be a strong possibility. There was going to be a lot of noise, and you know we have just so much to cover that I didn't want to deal with that. So I decided to call Lenny here, the Fight Smith, to see if he could come on and do some coverage here with me on Leaving the Ring. Fight fans, you want to call in? You certainly can. 347-215-7598. You can download the app and call in directly from the app, as well as leave us a voicemail. All the folks that did leave us a voicemail for last week's predictions for their Amir Khan, Devon Alexander, and Timothy Bradley and Chavez fight, I want to thank you. Much appreciated. Probably would compel a bunch of calls before we even post them. You know, I mean, there was quite a few calls, but, you know, we got this week too as well. I wanted to get actually the reaction and results from folks. So call back into the app. Leave your voicemail. If not, you can call into the show or tweet us what you thought about this past weekend fights. Hey, let's start it off with Showtime. Let me ask you here, Lenny. Abner Morris left Clemente after being knocked out by Johnny Gonzalez. It was the one punch that landed, I believe it was in that first round, and it really just took away the steam that Abner Morris had been building up, beating the Bantamweight tournament, really just taking out guys that were supposed to give problems. He looked bigger, he looked stronger, he looked like he was just growing into being one of the pound-for-pound best in the sport. Gets in with Johnny Gonzalez, gets blown out, kind of falls off the map, goes soul-searching, gets involved with Virgil Hunter, who's the head trainer of Andre Ward, picks up Angulo, picks up Khan, who fought this past weekend as well, but didn't look that great, didn't look that sensational. Looked like he was trying to adapt to a style that really didn't fit him. Goes back with his old trainer, comes back this Saturday, and I got to tell you, he did look impressive, but the guy that was standing across from him was supposed to make him look that certain way. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely. I think Mahrez, he did what he was supposed to do. He won. He won pretty easily. But I mean, the guy he was fighting was garbage. I mean, the guy did. I mean, Lomachenko made him look worse than Mahrez made him look even. And Lomachenko was in his third professional fight when he fought him. I mean.
Right.
It was an Al Haymon special for Mahrez, but I think Mahrez is getting back to getting his confidence back. I don't think he's gonna fight Johnny Gonzalez again. I probably wouldn't if I were him. I think Johnny Gonzalez might have his number, but I think
so
he's
too.
Coming back. I think he's coming back. I think he looks a lot better. I think he's looking more comfortable.
You know, as much as you would want to see the rematch, as much as I think every fan wants to see it, was it a fluke? Wasn't in a fluke. I think Abner Morris knows the answer to that. I know his handlers are going to say no, 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 no. I know that his trainer is going to say absolutely not. It was, it's boxing. You can get caught. But sometimes you just got to sit back and be realistic about certain things, like the way Oscar De La Hoya would get in with Shane Mosley. Just couldn't beat the guy. Maybe beat him in the ring, but couldn't beat him on the scorecard. With Abner Morris, there's a strong possibility because of his style. He likes to come forward. He takes risks by throwing punches. And when he does them in combinations, he leaves himself open. And Johnny's just a long, cagey, strong puncher that by any given moment can clip you and stop you. And given by age, I don't know about you, Lenny, but given by age and what Johnny is, he's not getting better. and he doesn't seem to look like he's getting any older, but he possesses something that most fighters never learn, and that's the basics of boxing. He knows how to box. He knows the standards of the use of how to use his abilities, and I think that's what's kept him so far gone in the game.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny Gonzalez is one of those guys. I want to see him fight more. I like watching him fight. He's going to lose to guys that are good. He's going to beat guys that are good, but he's fun to watch. And I think with Mahrez, he's tailor-made for him. I think he has his number. I think he could probably lose to a guy like Leo Santa Cruz, but still beat Mahrez 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, I'd love to see Johnny as well get back in there as many times as we can. But I think what they're doing is really, they're still celebrating, and rightfully so. I think what they're trying to do too is try to get any other fight that they could get on the table with the negotiation of bigger money. Because the fact is that Father Time is catching up. It's running down the sand in the hourglass. So while that's happening, you got to try to put as much as you can in the bank before it all just, you know, disintegrates and goes away. So anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry. What was that?
No, I mean, there's opportunities for him too. I mean, it's a loaded kind of couple of weight classes right there that he can fight in. And there's a lot of guys that could bring in some money for him. And so I just like to see him move on some of those potential fights. And I think he's one of those guys that could fight. He's not a Heyman guy. So I think he can fight on HBO or Showtime. I think it opens it up for him, makes it a little easier for him to move around and take some of these fights.
You know, this is where something like that hurts them, though. I mean, as much as we want to gripe about what Heyman does, sometimes, you know, Heyman could be the better of good for a fighter like the likes of Johnny Gonzalez. Because not having an Al Heyman figure behind you, it does kind of hurt you in terms of trying to negotiate to get on these type of networks, because the truth is, Johnny's a very, very dangerous puncher. So that makes other people very schemish or even want to get in there with them and risk their fighter's record or chin facing a guy that you're not going to win big note on, you know, with Johnny Gonzalez. Hate it or like it or not, Johnny's not a big name. He's only a big name with the boxing, hardcore boxing fans, but with the casual fans, beating him is really not going to put nothing major of note, in my opinion, major of note above anything that's going to make casual fans go like, oh, I want to see this guy more. What they're going to look at if they beat Johnny Gonzalez is like, okay, he beat another tough, cagey, game Mexican fighter. I want to move on. Let's go on to let's talk a little bit about Friday night. I know we went ahead of ourselves talking about Mars, but let's talk about Friday night. Isha Smith gets in with Arislandi Lara, and realistically, I think everybody pretty much called how this fight was going to happen, how it was going to fall into place, which, you know, he's definitely the more gifted, more sound boxer at the 154 division, but saying that already, and even saying that was supposed to be just another display of Laura's skills against Issa Smith, I got to tell you this, Lenny, watching that fight and sitting there and going, okay, who else out there could be a threat to Edison Lara? I don't think there's anything left for him to say that he's the best at 154. I'd like to see the guy jump up to 160. I think of all the names, crop of names that you can outline and underline in the 160 division, don't pose a threat to the likes of Gennady Golovkin. But if you put Lara into that mix, I think he's by far the only guy that could probably give him a real major run for his money. What do you thought?
Yeah, I think Lara, if he wants to fight, can beat anybody at 154. I think we might have scored the Canelo fight a little bit differently. I thought Canelo barely beat him, but it was by choice. It was by Lara's choice. I think Lara had the Canelo fight won, it was ready for the taking, and he left it on the table. But everybody else, I think he can beat everybody. Isha Smith is, I mean, he's terrible to watch, but he's a solid fighter, and Lara made him look silly the whole fight. I think he won like 10 rounds, and I had him winning about 10 rounds, and the two that he didn't win, he took off. The next step is to move up and fight Golovkin, and putting Lara in there against a guy who's a come-forward fighter who can come forward and can throw punches can result in fireworks. I mean, the Lara-Angulo fight was awesome. I loved watching that fight. I think people give Angulo a bad rap, calling him a quitter because his eye exploded. But I mean, he hurt Lara, and Lara, he exposed Lara's vulnerabilities that I think Triple G could probably expose. But at the same time, Lara ended up winning that fight and pretty handily in the rounds that he won.
You know, in so many ways, if you look at that Lara fight with Angulo, to me reminds me of the young Hector Camacho Sr. when he got in with Rosario and he got clipped, and he just changed his whole game plan after that. He was never the same guy. Didn't really sit down in his punches and try to engage. Lara, in a lot of ways, learned a lot from the Angulo fight. He's been a little bit more mobile. He's a little bit more, I would say, conservative with his punches. You know, I mean, even though he's always been conservative with his punches, I think he's a little bit smarter this time around. You know, I don't see him, like you said, I don't see him having any problems at 154. I did score for him. I did score the fight for him against Canelo. I thought he edged it out enough to get the win there, but obviously, you know, he didn't get that there. But moving him up to 160, I mean, could you put him up against Lemieux, Andy Lee? Do these guys pose a threat to Erson Lara if he moved up to 160? In my opinion, they don't. I think those two guys would want to steer clear away from Lara if he was to move up to 160. You know, and I spoke to his publicist today, and I briefly mentioned it, and he said that they don't know what the next move is, but I think the only move they have an option for them to do is to jump up to 160. Or if he was to jump up to 160, do you think, Lenny, that a David Lemieux or an Andy Lee, who had a sensational KO this past Saturday, do they pose a major, major, major threat to Lara?
I don't see Andy Lee taking that fight. I think that fight could make sense for Lemieux if for some reason the Golovkin fight doesn't pan out for him. I think Lara could. I think it'd be a good fight. I think Lemieux's a good come forward fighter with big strong hands that makes for a good fight against a guy like Lara. But I mean, I think Lara probably beats him on the cards. And I think it's one of those types of fights. I think Lara is the type of fighter that bigger names aren't afraid to take on because he's not a guy that's going to go and potentially light you up. He's not a Golovkin. I mean, and he's not a guy that's going to go and potentially end your career with a big punch. But he's a guy that's really skilled, that's starting to develop a name outside of the hardcore boxing fans and could give you some credibility if you can pull off the win against them.
Definitely. Definitely. You know, I mean, looking at Lara's resume, you got to sit there and say, okay, he's pretty much done the who's and the what's in his division. There's nothing left there to be said. No Kirtland's around. We don't know when he's ever going to pit back into the ring. So do you stick around and wait? Absolutely not. You got to move up. Issa Smith, I'm not sure to really think what to think about him. You know, you saw him complain. Here's the thing about Issa Smith. About two, three years ago, you liked the guy. Slowly going into the TMT, you kind of saw a little bit of change of character. And even when he won that title and he had that breakdown, we all kind of understood, okay, you know, this is a guy that been wanting to fight and have a chance at the title. But he broke down and made it really seem like he had beat somebody of significance. It was the canine. It was really nobody big. He was beating a guy that was a one-handed fighter. Here's the note here to make right now. He couldn't beat a guy that is another one-handed fighter, which is Lara. Lara doesn't use the right hand that much, but when he does use that right hand, is to give his left hand his left hand direction to land, and that's something that Issa Smith couldn't figure out at all. He did a lot of following. He didn't try to counter, and a lot of those punches, man, I hate to say this, even though he was trying to sit down on his punches, they were more shoeshine punches. There was really nothing behind that, because if there was, they could have slowed down Lara a lot more. Where does Issa Smith go from here? I don't know, and I'm not really sure many, many fight fans even care where he goes from here. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's take some quick calls over here on Leave the Ring real quick, Lenny.
For sure.
Let's go with area code 714. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? 715, you out there? No? Okay, let's go with Let's go to familiar caller that we know. CT, you're on live right now, leaving the ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, how you doing? I just want to talk about the Herrera robbery. And this guy can never get a break. You know, he had to fight against Garcia earlier in the year. And then, you know, he does everything that he could against Benavidez. And he just doesn't get the decision. I don't understand it. I'm sure he doesn't understand it, but I'm glad HBO will put him back on. He deserves it. And he's definitely one of the best fighters at 140. What do you guys think about that fight last Saturday?
Go ahead, Lenny. Drop down your thoughts.
I think Herrera schooled the kid, man. I think Herrera easily won the fight. And we just got finished talking about Lara. Lara, I think, loses close fights because of the style, because his style of fighting. Herrera loses close fights because he's just got, like, the worst luck in boxing, man. He just got hosed. I think he won probably 8 rounds, and 6 of them weren't even really close. There were maybe 4 rounds that could have gone either way, but at least 2 of those had to go to Herrera. I thought he won 8. I agree, CT. I think he won the fight. I think he got robbed again.
You know, I thought he won the fight. I gave it to Mauricio Herrera. I watched the fight a few times. But here's the thing, though, man. I think that the fact is this, is that Jose Benavidez did something in there that we haven't seen anybody do. Well, actually, no. What Danny Garcia couldn't do to Mauricio Herrera. Jose Benavidez took the jab to the body away from him. He was throwing the uppercut, so it made Herrera kind of stop in his tracks there and rethink another way of doing something. But what I watched there was the first half of Mauricio outboxing Jose. But Jose's trying to figure out in pockets what he could do, what was going to be beneficial for him. And by leaning on those ropes, I got to tell you this, what did Mauricio really do when he had him on those ropes? Because after he took away the outside game for Mauricio, I got to tell you, I was sitting there and I was watching this fight thinking, I don't think Mauricio knows what else to do. As a guy that claims to be the teacher, he looked a little stumped himself. And I think that's what made the judges start to score, was that what he was doing successful in that first half, watch the second half, he wasn't very successful after that 6th or 7th round. Now, maybe Jose Benavidez would have done that a little earlier and figured out the puzzle of Mauricio Herrera, we wouldn't be sitting here calling it a robbery. I don't think it was a robbery, you know, because I thought I had it pretty close, but it was definitely not justice to Mauricio Herrera because he didn't get the win when he obviously did deserve the win in that fight. He did enough in those early rounds to take over. I don't think Jose Benavidez did enough in the later rounds to try to copy anything down for himself to put in the bank. But, again, go watch that fight again. I thought it was a lot more closer. And Benavidez, to me, regardless of what this decision was, regardless that you don't believe that he has the title, I got to sit back and say, this guy's got the goods. This might have hurt him. Let's see how well he receives the fans not embracing him being the world champion right now. But I think if we give him time, this guy's going to grow into something really, really nice. What else is on your mind, CT?
I didn't get a chance to watch the Khan and Alexander fight, which I will do soon. But I wonder what some boxing fans might say about Khan's win. I mean, him, you know, having these couple of wins against Collazo and Alexander, I wonder if some Boston fans aren't still convinced about him going in there with a puncher yet, because the last few fights, he hasn't fought a puncher in, like, quite a while since Danny Garcia. So some Boston fans can somewhat say, you know, be a little bit more convinced when he's in there with a puncher, when he does take that type of shot, because we all know Alexander's not one of those punchers that will give us those questions, not even if Floyd Mayweather in that stakes, if Khan does get the fight. I mean, it's an interesting fight, but he hasn't fought a puncher yet. So can some boxer fans say, like, you know, they're not really convinced with it, these wins, because he hasn't been able to punch him to see how his chin is at 147?
That's a good point. You know, I think anything right now at the welterweight division is pretty argumental. I don't know if you agree with that, Lenny. I think right now everybody, it's a free-for-all. I don't think we can really hone down who's the best at the welterweight division. And you got the two major stars, obviously, that are out there, Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. But take those names out of the equation. and look at the overall of guys that are in the mix. You got Robert Guerrero, you got Keith Thurman, you got Josecito Lopez, you got Amir Khan, you still got Madonna. You got guys that are there that can, if you pitch them all together, we still get very good fights out of all of them. You know, but I think what it is that when Amir poses his hand speed and footwork, that he gives any of those other guys I just mentioned right now fits. He's got the possibility of outboxing him if he's able to control himself, which he did with the Devon Alexander fight. He didn't fall into his punches. He didn't seem like he was going to stay there and watch his artwork like he's done in the past where he's got caught by big punchers like Danny Garcia. He kind of learned a little bit of that lesson, though. You know, habits are hard to break, and he did do it in those mid rounds. I remember in the fifth round, Lenny, where he got caught with a beautiful straight right by Devon Alexander, and then he gets caught by a left hook because he stayed in that pocket just a bit too long. So I wonder, just like what CT's saying, is what happens when a big puncher does that to him? Do we see it all over again where a guy that has all the gifts in the world, but just with a blink of a punch, it could be taken away from him just like that?
Yeah, I think he looked good against Alexander. He did another guy that did what he was supposed to do. He looked good. But yeah, he did have those moments where he got rocked a little bit. He's chinny, man. I agree with you, CT. I think he's picking and choosing a little bit as much as he can based on his level of esteem and fighting guys that aren't going to hurt him. I mean, he's not in there with a big-handed John Molina, or I don't see him trying to call out. I mean, Adrian Broner, I think, has big hands too. And he's not trying to fight a guy like Adrian Broner, even though he's a little bit at a lower weight class. He's limiting himself to guys that he can outbox, guys that he can beat with speed and that aren't gonna light him up too much. And I think if he does get the Mayweather fight, you're right, it's another guy that's not going to hurt him potentially, that he has a chance to beat with his hand speed.
CT, we got anything else for you, brother?
No, I'm all set. Thank you.
All right. My fans, you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Don't forget to download the app and leave your voicemail if you haven't had a chance to call in today. Going back with Amir Khan, I mean, look, man, I got a lot of people that were hitting me up via Gmail and even on the voicemail. They said, okay, what are your thoughts about him beating Devon Alexander? And all I got to say was, remember Timothy Bradley. Remember Porter. I think what Khan did was something that was expected. And I don't know why so many are so quick to jump up and think that he blew out a guy that was supposed to give him a lot of problems. I think Devon Alexander had the chance, if he could, to rock Amir. But the no-brainer was that Amir was just going to be too fast for him, because we've seen what happens with Devon Alexander. He doesn't know how to register speed. He's a solid boxer, but he's still, in my opinion, growing in there. He's still got a lot of good fights left in him. He's not a guy you can write off the map. Here's a guy that still can be in the mix. I'd like to see him still get in there, like with a Robert the Ghost Guerrero, Madonna, guys like that. He's still a good name to see to get in there. But whether or not he's going to be one of the top flight guys, I think I think it's fair to say we can put that away in the closet. I don't know what you think, Lenny.
Yeah, Devon Alexander is definitely second or third tier guy now. I mean, he's a nice name. I think he can keep making a little bit of money going forward, being a guy that like a stepping stone kind of guy for up and coming guys, for prospects once they're at on like the precipice championship level. But I mean, he really has no business fighting for championships anymore. I think he's had his opportunity. He's gone up against some of the top guys. He's got a solid resume. He's not at that level. He's not at the top level or even close to the top level.
No, absolutely not. Now, on the HBO main event card, you had Timothy Bradley, who got in there with Diego Chavez, the Argentinian. And I got to tell you this, I've said this numerous times. Bradley's body is one thing that has to be suspect in his career. He's prone to accidents. His body just doesn't hold up. I even called him the Holyfield on the next round last week. I said he was the Holyfield of our era. He was a guy that had the physique of a small bodybuilder, but didn't have the punch, the power punch that comes along with that. He's always going to be accused of using his head, and he's always going to be in tough fights. He's always battling demons of trying to be the bigger guy in the ring, being only 5'6" or breaking through 5'7", I don't know. But he wants to be the big figure in that ring. Get in there with Diego Chavez. You could see a little bit of Timothy's temper, the little man syndrome, where he could have made the fight a bit easier, but instead he made it a little harder on himself. Diego Chavez, I don't know why I want to say Corrales, man. He's nothing like Diego Corrales. First off, Chavez, though, he's a game guy. But is he really a guy that's going to go anywhere in the sport? If anything, he's just a name filler for a guy that's either coming up or for a guy that needs to stay busy. That's who Diego Chavez is. Now, when you talk about the Cold War, is it over? Is it done and, you know, gone? I don't know yet, and I'm going to tell you why. Even though Jose Benavides and Mauricio Herrera went at it, even though there were smaller cards, you got to remember, those are smaller fights. I want to see champions, real champion versus real champion. For instance, I would like to hear Timothy's name being dropped into the Amir Khan, along the side of Amir Khan. Something like that, you know, or even Porter against Timothy Bradley. Find out exactly whether or not if there's a real commitment between Top Rack and Golden Boy, because right now they're still filling each other out. I can't completely say that the ice has completely fallen out until they're all the way committed. I don't know what you think, Lenny, but right now I don't see a major commitment. I see a bit of flirting between the both of them.
I think it's more. I mean, again, I hate to harp on the Al Haymon thing, but I think it's an Al Haymon Top Rank Cold War now. I think the guys that Oscar has or the Golden Boy has that aren't tied to Al Haymon, those guys are getting fights made. Those guys are getting fights made against Arum guys or on HBO. I mean, what's his name? Rosado just signed with Golden Boy and. He's not an Al Haymon guy. Lemieux just signed with Golden Boy, and he's not an Al Haymon guy. I mean, those guys are free to fight Top Rank guys, and I think I can see those fights happening. I mean, that's why Lemieux's getting in, or people are talking about Lemieux as a potential Triple G guy. That's a fight that could happen. I think I just don't see any of the Haymon guys jumping over and getting on Showtime anytime soon.
That's what really sucks about the sport sometimes. You know, when you look at one thing and you say this could be resolved, and it's being resolved, you forget to turn the page and see what starts to begin in the new chapter. And that's something that's in that new chapter. When we talk about – I've talked to a few people about Roc Nation, and he's, you know, because Roc Nation is in the process of buying out Gary Shaw. I had a few folks going like, hey, what do you think about that? Do you think it's a good thing? I mean, look what 50 Cent did. But the thing between 50 Cent and Roc Nation was that 50 Cent, it almost kind of fell on his lap. He was kind of forced into it because he was going in business with Floyd Mayweather, and that didn't pan out. BFF thing, it all fell apart. Roc Nation had a little bit more interest. They showed a little bit more commitment by trying to highball certain fights, which was the Wilder and Stavern fight, which is the Peter Quillen fight. They were dropping some big dollar symbols there. So by them saying, you know what, we're going to have to probably buy the smaller cards, buy into a promotional group that has been in the game for some time and is more stable. Now, what I'm hearing is they're buying the promotional company, but they're keeping Gary Shaw there. And I'm pretty sure you've heard of contracts like that, Lenny, where a big corporation would come in, buy a smaller corporation, but they keep the lead guy there to help the daily functions until they learn the process of running the business, right?
Yeah, and I think another aspect of the Gary Shaw deal is they're getting all his fighters. They're getting some solid guys I mean, they have nobody right now. Rock Nation's got no fighters, no fights. They didn't until they made this deal. And I can see them going forward and doing that to some of the other promotional companies, because I think the atmosphere in boxing right now is you're either Top Rank, Golden Boy, or you're working with Al Heyman and doing whatever Al Heyman's telling you to do, like I think DiBella's kind of been doing lately, and to a lesser extent, Goose and Tudor has been kind of doing. And
Warriors.
And hopefully Rock Nation is, yeah, hopefully Rock Nation's coming in. I think they're coming in with a lot of money. I mean, if they're
they're
in the money that they're throwing around.
Right. They have deep pockets, too. And here's another thing is that, you know, Rock Nation's CEO, which is Jay-Z, his wife, Beyonce, is suing Al Heyman right now. They're in the process of a legal dispute. But when you think of, like, and goes back to what I was answering was, you know, okay, what do you think? You think that, because what 50 Cent couldn't accomplish, could Rock Nation do it? Absolutely, because I don't think that 50 Cent was wholehearted in being a boxing promoter. His hands are just in too many cookie jars. Where Rock Nation seem to have a better idea. They seem to be a little bit more organized, a little bit more disciplined. They have a staff, and they're buying dates up in the East Coast. So they show me the incentive that they want to be a promoter, and they want to get into the mix. So it does make the fight game a little bit more interesting, because you now got three promoters, which is Top Rank, Golden Boy, and Rock Nation. Right now, it's too early to tell with Rock Nation, but I have a feeling that they're going to start steamrolling up a little bit and become a little bit bigger and powerful in the game because of the dollar value that they bring. But you got these three guys. They're basically going to keep the sport on HBO, Showtime, or any network they can, where Al Heyman is still trying to do something that Dana White is trying to do, which is be a monopoly with the sport itself, boxing. I keep hearing that Al Heyman is still trying to make this into a network where you got to go through an Al Heyman Sports to watch his fights. We have to pay, and he's trying to get rid of the bigger networks that are around, like Showtime and HBO. Don't see that happening if he can't get in compliance with the other three promoters that are out there right now. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing. Let's pass in some more fight fans here on Leaving the Ring really quick. Let's go with area code 111. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? 111. You out there? Yeah, 111. Are you out there? Nope. Okay. They're probably just listening in. Let's go. Area code 914. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hi.
What's up, brother? What's on your mind? Hello?
I am Julian, and I farted.
I don't know if his phone's breaking up, Lenny. Let's go with area code 787. You're on live now. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Aw, shit. Who picked Chavez to win? Now, let me stop. Because he didn't win.
What's up, Rob?
man, what's up, guys?
Good, brother. What's on your mind, man?
Not much. You know, I want to talk, you know, about Lara going up. I'm gonna keep it real. My hate for Triple G is rising a little bit, and I'm gonna keep it real though. I'm just being a hater. I have no solid reason yet.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna find one through the dedication of being a hater. I'm gonna find a legit reason to hate Triple G. But I don't want to see Lara lose to Triple G, because then the fans will not stop. But and plus he's really, you know, like you guys said, he got knocked down by Angulo. And what does, you know, at the end of the day, that's more of a lose for Triple G than it is for a win, because if he,
But let me ask you this. Have you seen anything that tell you right now that Triple G can figure out the style that Laura brings to the table?
No, that's a great point, because that's always one of my, you know, when I'm not just trying to be a hater and stuff like that, and I'm always trying to debate with Triple G fans, I always say, well, he's been fed the same style almost. You know, he's been fed these guys that are there to hit, that are there to be hit. He hasn't been in there with a slick mover and stuff like that. But, you know, Lara, I don't know if maybe he has the frame for 160, because Triple G isn't a really big 160 either. That's what a lot of people don't understand. He walks around like at 167, from what I heard. So he's not like a huge 160. But Lara could give him trouble. We're going to see in this Murray fight, though. You know, a lot of people forget about Murray. Murray's, you know, he's okay. His skill or his footwork and stuff is okay. I don't know what you guys think about Murray, but his footwork is okay.
Yeah, I think that Murray is by far the most solid opponent that Triple G is going to be getting in with. You know, I think that, if anything, the draw out into rounds that Triple G needs, it's going to be something that fans are not going to be used to. I mean, let's think about this here. Keith Thurman basically got the boos and from the audience, but you imagine if it was in Mexico, he would have got the bottles being flown at the poor kid. Because fans, when they get you in the idea that you're blowing out guys, it's expected. They go out there to expect a blowout every time out. They don't understand that sometimes a fighter has either an off night or they just can't get the guy out of there. I wonder how solid, how sound the Triple G fan base really is when he can't get a guy out of there. When he does struggle with a person that can take his punch or can outmaneuver him and outslick him. That's where the telling is. That's when you find out if there's really, really a strong fan base. All I can say is a la Lucas Matisse. Remember, everybody was on that wagon, but as soon as he couldn't figure out the Danny Garcia Swift move, guess what? Everybody jumped off right away.
I want to also say that I don't know, because obviously Triple G, he's really quiet. You know, I don't have a problem with him, actually. He's a really nice guy, great in the amateurs, has a good record right now. But
absolutely.
I don't know if it was his head coach or somebody from his team that kept saying for a while, it was like around the internet, that he would take on anybody from 154 to 168.
He was on Leaving the Ring saying that. Yeah.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
was Abel
yeah.
Sanchez.
Like,
he was on Leaving the Ring. And I remember that interview. Perfect. I have it on. It's on our YouTube channel, actually. And I remember that I even told him that. I had to be honest with him. I said, look, I don't believe it yet until it happens because of certain opponents that he's faced. I think it's a bold statement to say that I can go to 154 to 168 and do that because it really hasn't – I mean, it's been done, but it's really – it's not something you want to, you know, dabble in a bit. You know, you want to kind of stay in the division.
Yeah, you don't want to put that out there.
Yeah, you want to kind of stay in the division, clean it out, and then jump up or jump down. But we have seen throughout history what happens when you jump up and then you decide to lose that muscle mass. When you go back down in division, it's just not a very good idea.
Yeah, because Triple G, I think somebody from his team, again, I don't know if Abel Sanchez said this on the show, but I heard this coming around. He was talking about Kovalev and that he would like that fight, but then I heard Duva respond and say, well, that would only happen at 175. We're not going to go down to fight Triple G. You know, he has to come up. But then all of a sudden, he didn't want to go up. Like, it's like he wants these fights, but he wants people to come to him. And in my opinion, he's not that big. He's not a big name yet. Like, he's big to the hardcore fans. Like, he's a trend, I would call him, you know?
I would say, look, Abel Sanchez is an old-school guy. He's been around in the fight game for, I don't know, 20 years or more, if that. You know, and there's tricks to the fight game. There's tricks to how to market your fighter. You tag your fighter's name with a guy that's being talked about a lot. And that's what he does. You know, Sergio Martinez did it. You know, and so forth and so forth. Fighters have done that. To, you know, they have to tag their name on somebody that is right now the it factor. And I think that's what Triple G and them have done. And slowly but surely, their fan base is growing. There's no denying that. Their fan base is growing big time.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to be the Triple G fanboy, and I admittedly, I'm a big Triple G fan, but I think he can carry. I think he can go. He's in that body frame. You're right. He's a smaller middleweight. I think he can go down to 154, fight a lot of guys, and beat a lot of guys at 154. Kind of not regularly, but in a one-off type situation. And I think at 168, he can move up and fight a handful of top guys at 168, and at least compete with the top guys at 168. Again, not on a regular basis. I don't think he's a super middleweight. I think he's a middleweight. But I think he. There's some truth to Abel Sanchez's statement. It's an overreach. It's puffing for sure. But I think he can. He's got the style and he's got the punch to be able to move around weight class here and there. But you guys are right. He's a middleweight. He's a smaller middleweight. I do think him and Lara would be a hell of a fight to watch, man. I think that's one of my dream fights that I'd like for 2015 because it puts Golovkin against a guy that he hasn't, a type of guy that he hasn't seen before. He's used to guys running, but not guys that can run and punch at the same time. And that's what Lara does. Lara runs, and then he uses that the fact that he's left-handed and kills you with that straight left. And Golovkin hasn't faced anybody like that.
No.
And Lara hasn't faced anybody that can hit like Golovkin.
No, exactly. And I think that's what makes it such an intriguing match, because if you look at Lara, let's be honest, this guy's walking around at 160. You know, he belongs at 160. He's got a big back, big frame. He punches. He has a hell of a punch. The thing that I think that separates Lara from a hard puncher right now, to really label him as a hard puncher, is that he throws maybe one or two punches at a time. Then he rolls out. He gets out of the way of danger. He's got that Cuban style. And I think that's what makes the fight between him and Gennady Golovkin even more interesting, is the fact you got two pedigree guys with amateur styles that come in with amateur styles that have seen every style and would really mesh, I think, pretty good in the ring. But it really comes down to the promoters. Do they want to risk that? I think Golden Boy would risk Lara just because of the fact they don't know where to put him at. Where do they put him at 154 anymore? You know, and if they want another big money fight for Lara and to kind of cash out on Lara, well, you put him at 160 and you put him in with Gennady Golovkin. Rob, you got anything else for you, brother?
The Khan fight was, a lot of people keep talking about the punch thing, but all I got to say about the punch thing is that punchers got to knock people out. You know, Khan getting knocked out by a puncher it doesn't make the guy any less of a puncher, doesn't make him any more of a puncher. We know that Khan has a glass jaw, and I've always said this, you know, ever since Khan made his debut, I think it was at like 135 when he fought Barrera, I was pretty confident that if he could take a few shots, he could beat Floyd. He has the output to beat Floyd, because that's really all it is with those bullshit Kapu box stats, that Floyd throws like one punch and it equals to 100. I don't know where the hell they get, you know, Paulie Malignaggi out here. But Amir Khan, you know, I don't know, because he beat Maidana. Maidana's a top guy at 147 now. So I guess Keith Thurman, but Keith Thurman is unproven. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, So I don't know. I don't see like a bright future for him outside of the Mayweather fight. But Mayweather is not interested in fighting him at all.
Let me tell you this. The only thing that's bright for those guys right now is that they're not on another banner. They're on the Heyman Sports banner. So they really do have more of a chance of getting that sweepstake with Floyd Mayweather, you know. But, you know, I would like to really hear Amir's name being brought up to Manny Pacquiao. I'd like to hear Keith Thurman's name being brought up to Manny Pacquiao. But we know that's not going to happen. You know, I'd like to hear more Amir Khan and Keith Thurman being in the mix against each other. Other names that are really valuable that should be thrown in there, Timothy Bradley, Porter, those kind of names, you know. Here's the thing, too, with Devon Alexander, man, and same thing here. You know, when people were, like, raving about this win, I was like, it was a good win. It was a good win. But let's go back what Timothy Bradley did. It's almost the same thing, you know. Did the same thing. But with Devon Alexander, if we watch that fight, and I watched it over and over, Devon Alexander doesn't know how to cut off the ring. He really doesn't know how to close the distance. You got to be there for him to hit, you know. And even when he was really there in position, it took
him like...
He doesn't
have head movement.
And he has no head movement, but even when he was in position to throw the punch, it almost took him like 5 to 10 seconds to get off. And that was enough time for Amir to get off and throw his punches and get out of there. But... like I said, go back and watch certain rounds. When Devon Alexander threw the first punch, he had some success, but the guy wasn't doing it enough to keep a certain pace. Why? Because the hand speed was evident that it puzzled him, and he couldn't seem to get around it at all. Rob, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. Thanks for calling in.
All right, man. Thanks.
You know, we can go back and forth here where Amir Khan stands. Like I said, you know, we want to see new names kind of go up against these guys like Pacquiao and Mayweather. I'm not opposed if the fight does happen. I think that Amir brings a lot of questions. One is that Floyd hasn't faced a fast fighter in quite some time. Two is, would the fast hands and the fast feet and the in-and-out movement puzzle Floyd? But at the same time, Floyd has been a master of figuring out styles. He's been a master of adjusting to what you bring to the table. You know, he's getting a little older. He's getting a little slower doing it. You know, that was pretty evident when he faced Marcos Chino Madonna. But on that second half, he figured it out in the first fight. In the rematch, he completely figured it out. You know, didn't have much problems. It was more Madonna trying to find out what his pace was going to be. Didn't seem like the same guy. A lot of folks felt that, you know, the conditioning did a whole had a big part in it. But I thought that it wasn't just the conditioning. It was the major, the big factor, which was Floyd Mayweather in the ring with him. Amir Khan has something there that it does bring some type of interest. But whether or not it's the interest enough where you think that he's going to be a major threat, that's the question. I think folks are going to build it up to hopefully have it like it could be a potential big fight. But I'm not sure if it would be. Because, Lenny, if you really think out throughout boxing history, all big fights that bring big numbers and bring big crowds rarely ever hold up to the big fight. It's really the fights that you kind of overlook. It's really those fights that you don't think are going to be a good mesh because it's not good on paper that turn out to be an awesome, tremendous fight.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a little bit of, like the great fights, at least in the last 10 years. Most of them have been kind of catching you by surprise. The Vasquez-Marquez fight Barrera Morales, those types of fights. I mean, those aren't the huge names going up against the huge names, and they end up going down in the annals of history as some of the greatest fights that we've seen. But yeah, I mean, you're right. It's those huge marquee fights. They're more like events. They're more like happenings than true great fights. I mean, when Oscar fought Floyd, that was an event. That wasn't. And it was a good fight. I mean, it was a good competitive fight, but it wasn't the type of fight that you forever will tell your kids about. And I feel like if the Floyd Mayweather fight, I mean, if the Floyd Pacquiao fight ever happens, we're going to end up with the same situation. But we still want to see it. We still just want to see the best fight the best.
It's something that you want to check off of your boxing list. You know, that's what it comes down to. To it, you know, is that you want to check this off. You want to be able to say, yeah, we lived through the biggest, richest fight to ever be made between both of these guys. Now, I get a lot of people hitting this up on the Gmail, hitting me up on either on Twitter or Facebook. Anytime I log on to the computer, the big question is, do you think this fight's ever going to happen? Is it or is it getting closer to happening? Folks, I got to tell you the truth. I don't know. Honestly, I've been saying this for the longest time. I don't think it's ever going to happen. I think there's just too much involved in it. But I did say this. I said this about, I don't know, 2 months ago when Canelo and Cotto were being talked about. And I said if it's ever to be made, which is still, it's still in negotiations. I know some folks are saying it's happening May 2nd. But until we get it on paper, until it's pressed out, then we for sure would say that it's happening. But I said that if this fight continues to get the press, the fight's interest, and which I think could become by far one of the most lucrative money fights in history and breaking gates, population, would be this fight. Why? Because there's so much significance behind this. There's history behind it. First time ever you're going to see a Puerto Rican and a Mexican fighting for the near middleweight title. One guy's in his prime. The other guy, not so much out of his prime, but the history of rivalry between Mexico and Puerto Rico, it just adds so much more to the pot. So if you look at Floyd Mayweather's ego and sense of him not being the center of attention, him not getting the biggest purse and not generating the biggest gate, monies and attendance at a fight, it's got to strike a little bit to his ego. It's got to make him feel like, oh, no, this can't happen. So I said that he's done this notorious times when Manny at the time was at his high peak of his stardom. Anytime Manny fights were coming up, he would come up with something to take away any kind of limelight off of that. And now he's got a new monster in front of him, which is Canelo and Cotto. who he both, you know, who he beat both. But at the same time, they're doing good without him. They're kind of showing boxing, because anytime you hear people say in boxing, well, what happens when these guys leave the sport? What do you have then? Well, Cotto and Canelo are obviously showing you that because you lose to the guy that's the man in the division or the man of the sport that's carrying the sport, doesn't necessarily mean they can't live without them, that they can't continue to hold on what's ever left of the sport. And they're showing that. So I've always said that if this fight's talked about, you're definitely going to hear the flirtation of Floyd Mayweather talking about a possible showdown on May 2nd with Manny Pacquiao. Whether it's going to happen, I'm not hopeful about it. Lenny, I don't know how you feel, but I'm not hopeful about it. And that's why I don't really talk too much about it on Twitter or Facebook or even back on emails, because to me, it's just whistle in the wind.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first question you get from a super casual boxing fan or from a person that isn't a boxing fan that just is kind of paying attention to the sport on the side. Where is that fight going to happen? I mean, we've been going down this road for going into 5 years now. I mean, if it happens, awesome, great. If it doesn't happen, let's focus on some of these other amazing fights that could potentially happen. That still probably won't happen, but at least, I mean, the potential Cotto Canelo fight could be huge. And I think, honestly, if that fight happens if they can finalize it and make that deal happen and make it for May 2nd, I think Floyd takes the first half of 2015 off. I think he makes up some excuse for not fighting in the first half of the year, tries to fight in September and tries to fight somebody who maybe can build up their name in the time in between. But as far as Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather fight goes, I mean, talk is talk. It's if that fight happens, great. If it doesn't, I mean, it's no different than it was last year or the year before.
Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We've got about another 10 minutes here left on Leave the Ring. Let me tell you this, man. When you watch boxing, anytime you watch the sport, it's a sport of life. That's what I've always called it, you know. It's a sport of life. The ring is really the truth detector. In other words, if you go in there saying, I'm this and I'm that, the ring's going to find out. It's going to expose what you're really about. It's going to peel back all the layers of bullshit till we finally get to the center of your character. That's what the ring is to me. And it also, what it does, the ring crowns certain people to become kings. Or it grants certain fighters their dreams. In a lot of ways, the ring is also a genie for the sport because it does such things like that. Saturday night, we had a chance to watch the ring named Genie do that to Andy Lee. And it's great to see such a storyline where a guy that had a mentor and who's a protege of the late Emmanuel Stewart finally get his shot, win the fight with Kovalov, who wasn't supposed to win, who was supposed to be another name and another fighter for the other guy to reach the peak of the mountain of stardom. Or possibly get to that peak. But he was in the talks of that. But Andy Lee was the boulder that came down the hill and stopped any hike up to that peak. That's why I love the sport boxing. Andy Lee right now is 2014 Cinderella Man. Lenny, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I picked Andy Lee to lose. I don't think he's that skilled of a fighter. I don't think he's an elite boxing talent. But he's pretty good, and he's got that grit. He's got that kind of killer instinct that keeps him in every fight, even if he's losing every round. And I think he was losing pretty much every round of his last two fights, and still he comes out with those wins. I love watching guys like that. I kind of dogged him a little bit in my predictions this last week, but yeah, that's what boxing is about. You get that puncher's chance. Is great when you still have it at the elite level or at the higher level of the game. When it's a championship fight and the guy that's favored to win comes in and is winning and winning every round and being the superior boxer, and then the other guy just reaches deep down and pulls out a couple big punches and puts the guy down and everything changes. I mean, it really is. It's the People ask me why I'm a lawyer. I'm kind of a brainy guy. People ask me why I like boxing, why I like such a barbaric sport. And it's really that sport where every single fight can end in a split second. I mean, it's not like a football game where you got a team that's down by 70 and there's no way they're going to win.
Right.
I mean, it you could be losing 11 rounds and in the 12th round it's over and you beat the guy. It's awesome, man.
It is. It's the anticipation of anything could happen at any moment. You could be really down, and like I got to give it to you. I mean, look, Andy Lee here, he did far more better than what I expected. You know, because I said on my prediction was the fact that if Andy Lee, throughout his career, he's shown that if he gets tagged, for some reason, his face becomes a magnet. He's got no head movement. He doesn't know how to pull back, give himself space. This fight Saturday, he did that. He was able to really not get caught too clean. He kept his hands up. He was losing the fight, though. But he did subtle things that Anna Booth, I think, kind of rubbed on him. And those subtle things made a major, major difference. And I really expected that to just kind of play out to it, that he was going to throw the right hand, and it would probably clip, but it probably wouldn't go any further from that. You would have it maybe once every four rounds it would land. But it wouldn't be the story of the fight. And boom, out of nowhere, again, this guy had what do you call that card when you're playing Monopoly, when you get locked up,
get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah, the get-out-of-jail-free card. He pulls it out again, and he gets out of jail. He gets out of the cage that he had, you know, that he was confined in, and he gets out of there. You know, he actually did what Tim Lane wanted Chris Algieri to do, you know, let him out of the cage. You know, and he did that. So that's what I loved about it. Now, where does it put him at? That's the thing, is that here's a wild card that really wasn't supposed to be wild, Lenny. He really wasn't supposed to be. This was supposed to be his swan song of going away. Hey, you know, we love watching you. You got the opportunity because you had the name of Emmanuel Stewart on the side of your trunks, in the front of your trunks. You wore the colors. And we wanted to believe in Emmanuel Stewart. But at the same time, we were like, you know, God, you're so limited. We don't think it's going to happen. So you didn't really think of the future in mind with this kid. Where do you put Andy Lee at now? Honestly, I think Andy Lee now becomes even the more wilder card at the middleweight division because he does carry that big punch, and it seems that he's always getting that get-a-jail-free card, and he could get it at any given moment. Where do you put him at, Lenny?
Well, I think the rumors kind of floating around is he talked about it after the fight, too. I think he wants to go back and fight in Ireland. And I think a guy like Billy Joe Saunders presents him a great opportunity. I mean, the thing about Andy Lee, I kind of shade on him a little bit for not being super skilled, but everybody that I've talked to, everybody that you hear about on Twitter says that he's one of the good guys in boxing. He's the guy that signs
Absolutely.
Autographs, that's great with fans. So you love seeing guys like that succeed and make money. And so I think he's going to end up going back, fighting in Ireland or in England, where he's probably going to be appreciated a little bit more than he will be in the United States. Fight a guy from over there, fight a Billy Joe Saunders type of guy, and make a bunch of money, and then throw his name in the hat and try and go up against a guy like Triple G, and see what he can do.
I say that I think going back to Ireland, fighting there for his folks, and you know, selling out a crowd, making some money off of this title, this fringe title that he received, you know, because the game is to make money. And I know a lot of us, we don't like to talk about the business of boxing, and we don't even want to hear about it. And unfortunately, it is now being more pounded into our ear these past couple of years because it's become a factor. It's become a major, major factor in a debate with fans when they're trying to protect their fighters about why not move into a more danger zone for the fighter, right? But when it comes to Andy Lee's case, I almost want him to kind of, you know, bathe in the moment, try to soak it all in, let him make a little bit of money here and there. Sometimes in boxing, there shouldn't be a rush, especially like a guy with Andy. I think that you got the title, great for you, Emmanuel Stewart is looking down and smiling down on you. Allow him to have maybe three fights. Then you throw him back in with the big dogs and see what happens from there. Because by the time you do that, I think a David Lemieux will be ready, prepped up to see what happens, what kind of explosion, combustional explosion can happen between those two big punchers. Gennady Golovkin, I think he's right now at the top that he could pick at any time who he wants to feed on because he's got that. He's in the position of doing that. And I think, too, that's why Laura's people should really start thinking about moving into that 160 division before it gets too deep, you know. Chris Pearson fought on the Friday night fight. I don't know what you ever think about that kid. I think he's a solid kid. He's still got a lot to learn in there. He's got potential. What I like about him, though, is that here's a guy that's got fast hands. He's got decent punching power, but, man, he likes to get punched a lot. His face is always coming out looking like mesh, no matter what he does, man. But he's a solid guy. He's still a prospect. I still enjoy watching him. I think he still has a lot of room to grow. But I think 2015 for sure, man, we're going to start seeing some new guys coming up into the sport. A lot more guys to talk about at the 160 division, even at 154, and even at 168. I don't know what your final thoughts here, Lenny. You go ahead and break it down. We're almost at the tail end of our show.
You know, I just want to thanks for letting me pitch hit this week. hopefully we can do it again.
Absolutely, brothers. Hey, man, you guys have a all good night. Make sure you enjoy the week, and don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. You guys take care.